New month, same worries. The coronavirus pandemic continues to dominate the news. That's no surprise. And the details of how some segments of the economy and supply chains are dealing with issues connected to the crisis are, well, unsettling. And starting today, some states are starting to take steps to restart businesses, and we are all watching very closely.
From the month of May, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis.
Good morning,
hey,
buddy.
Man. Yeah, good morning to you. We are on the edge of what appears will be a beautiful weekend here in Northeast Iowa,
man. Yeah, you betcha. Yeah, I can't wait.
It looks like it's going to be absolutely gorgeous. I wish we could take some of this beautiful weather that we're having in our part of the world and send it to other parts of the country, because they are struggling. They are falling a little behind on planting. And here in Northeast Iowa, good grief. We've made some remarkable progress on getting both the corn and the soybean crops planted. We'll be talking with Pam Johnson about that at the end of the show today. We're going to get her Farm On story. As you know, we've been celebrating Farm On all week right here on AgriTalk. Yes. And there's still time to participate in this. If you would like to share your Farm On story in either a message or a photo, just text that with the with Farm On in the message. That's one word, capital F, capital O-N, Farm On, to 31313. And Farm Journal social media will be putting that to use in the days ahead. Okay.
You bet.
It's like I said in the open. Here we are. It's May 1. We got a new month.
Right.
You'd like to think that, with the turn of the calendar, the flip of the calendar, maybe the issues start to change some here. And you know what?
Right.
They are starting to change, because we are watching what those what businesses are doing in states that are starting to open up.
We got some major retailers planning to open their doors in some of them as early as today and throughout the rest of the month of May here, too. So we'll detail that in the news a little bit later. But
Very good.
They're giving her a shot anyway.
Yep, that's right. Let's go ahead and get to it, man.
Well, Chip, tensions between the United States and China are heating up as U.S. officials discuss retaliation against China for its handling of the coronavirus outbreak. Representatives of multiple agencies reportedly met yesterday on the matter. Speaking to reporters, President Trump said, quote, "We signed a trade deal where they're supposed to buy, and they've been buying a lot, actually. But that now becomes secondary to what took place with the virus. The potential for retaliation against China does not bode well for phase one trade relations. Some ideas under consideration include tariffs, sanctions, non-tariff trade restrictions, and possibly lifting China's sovereign immunity, which would allow lawsuits against Beijing in U.S. courts." Heating back up again on the China front, baby.
Well, yeah. You remember what we called the agreement as we were struggling to get it done and couldn't seem to get any traction? Mm. We were calling it phase none. I wonder. Yeah. I hope we're not sliding all the way back to phase none on this. But we'll talk about that with Wiesmeyer coming up in just a bit.
Maybe we can call it phase none 0.0. Would that help? The Federal Reserve has none 0.0. The Federal Reserve has expanded its Main Street lending program to allow larger businesses to participate. The Fed will also relax minimum loan amounts to help more small-scale businesses. The start date for the expanded program has not yet been announced. Meanwhile, the federal government's $660 billion aid package for small businesses may leave hundreds of thousands of businesses struggling to survive because of its limits on non-payroll expenses. And Chip, that would be, you know, sort of the balance between a business's rent and other sort of expenses beyond payroll. And that's a little bit out of whack for smaller businesses.
Absolutely. It's like we talked about with Sean Kennedy from the National Restaurant Association earlier this week. It's those restart costs that are And not only that, if they do follow the CDC guidelines and the social distancing, they're going to have to reduce the number of seats that they've got. So instead of going at 100% capacity, maybe they're going to be running at 50, 60% of capacity. Right. That doesn't generate the revenue that they need either. It's a mess, dude.
Nope. Yep. Well, OPEC Plus will initiate production cuts today, crimping output by 9.7 million barrels per day in May and June. However, Chip, demand has fallen more sharply than expected, suggesting the cuts may not go far enough. Meanwhile, the number of oil rigs in operation around the world fell 22% in April to just 1,514.
Wow.
USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue says he expects meatpacking plants to reopen in days, not weeks, under the president's executive order. Perdue was tasked with crafting guidance for implementation, and USDA says it will ask meat processors to submit plans in writing on how they will safely operate amid a spike in worker infections. Perdue said, quote, worker health and safety is the first priority here. We want to assure the workers and the community of their safety. And finally, Chip, the U.S. retailers are anxious to reopen in states and areas where coronavirus infections are falling. Macy's says it plans to reopen 68 of its locations on Monday. Best Buy reports it hopes to open around 200 locations in May. Now, as of today, more than a dozen states have begun loosening restrictions, with retailers in Texas and Alabama set to open their doors with some capacity restrictions. But, Chip, California state beaches in Orange County will be closed this weekend after citizens gathered there last week. Apparently ignoring social distancing there on the beach.
Yeah, that is a hit. The pictures coming out of Orange County, California from last weekend were a little crazy, no doubt. And here in the state of Iowa, 77 counties are being, and we've got 99 in the state, but 77 counties are starting to open up. The other 22 still have restrictions on them, and I'm in one of those counties that still has the restrictions on them. So. We'll see how it goes. All right. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Boy, I tell you what, I've been following your coverage on the website, Jennifer, and you've been doing a bang-up job trying to keep the information flowing out there and looking at alternatives for what some of the hog producers can do with market-ready hogs. Now we're talking about putting some of them outside. Is that right?
You know, it's not an option that producers really want to have to do, because quite honestly, it really takes a lot of thought and work before you make that move. Yeah. But it is something that some are considering to do, just to be able to hold those pigs somewhere a little longer and make space in their barn. Yeah. And so, you know, there's several things. We posted a story this week about 8 things that you need to think about before you do it. But a couple that stood out to me this week were, you know, making sure that you provide some sort of shade, because these white hogs that many people have in their barns are just really susceptible to burn. So we need to be careful with that, and to not lose sight of biosecurity. Just because you're moving them outside doesn't mean you can let up on that. And it does make some of those biosecurity protocols a little more challenging. And so, you know, the story offers some suggestions of things you can do to make that easier.
Yeah. I'm going to say again the way that how we started the conversation here, Jennifer. Your coverage has just been outstanding. You've got to go to porkbusiness.com is where you can go and get a lot of information about how the coronavirus pandemic is impacting the pork business. And Jennifer, you've been doing a great job. Keep it up, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
You bet. That is Jennifer Shike from Farm Journal's Pork. Okay, coming up next, we're going to get this free-for-all going.
Talk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Let's get this free-for-all going. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio joins us right now. How you doing, Sean?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Chip. I'm doing great. It's Friday. The week flies by, and we're starting to see some sports are going to come back online here shortly, which is I'm kind of excited about, to be honest with you.
Are you a race fan?
Well, you know, I used to really follow racing closely. Yeah. I heard a rumor they're going to do 6 races in like 11 days. I think I will be a race fan again.
Yeah, no doubt. I was thinking the same thing. It's going to be crazy that if they pull that schedule off. And not only that, they're getting away from, obviously, they're going to get away from the weekends only and start put some races on one of the networks on in prime time during the week. I'll bet you that gets some attention.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing else on TV. Look at the NFL draft. Ratings are up 32% compared to any other draft. Like, it's there's a thirst for sports to give back. And hopefully, I think that's also good for the mental state of people too, right? I think it's very, very helpful, and it's good to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, as long as we're talking racing, I got to mention the interview that I had with Dr. Andy Randolph from ECR Engines yesterday on AgriTalk, talking about how they fine-tune those engines and that how they are going for more power from those engines with ethanol, and that he's looking forward to the increase from E15 to E30 so that they can get even more power out of the engines. Dude, it was just like, yes, keep talking it, Andy. It was awesome.
That's right up your alley right there.
It was all about the octane, man. It was all about the octane. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer. She joins us right now. Pam, it's good to talk with you again. Everything okay up there?
Yes, we are all well, and I listened to that interview also, and I was also thinking what good news that is, and that's just what we're trying to do is optimize engines for people like you and me and consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the reason I wanted to do that conversation, Pam, was because I feel like coming out of this, we're going to have to change the conversation around ethanol, and we're going to have to get back to some of the key points that it helps the environment, that it's a renewable fuel. We're going to have to talk benefits on the basis of ethanol alone rather than relying just on the RFS when we get to the other side of this crisis.
Right. That being said, you know, we definitely don't want to grant those waivers of the RFS to the different states now. And those are the talking points we've used all along, but maybe now they pack a more powerful punch.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, joins us right now. Jim, welcome back to the free-for-all.
Good to be on.
Okay. So are we looking at a phase none on this?
Never rule anything out when it comes to U.S. and China relations in the Trump era.
Now, when you look at how China has some of the comments that they've made about Australia and the comments that the Australian government is saying about, you know, China's responsibility in the coronavirus outbreak and how they shirked that responsibility in making the rest of the world aware of what was going on. I mean, China just made they made no bones about it. They just said, listen, if you pursue this, we're going to shut off Australian tourism. We're going to shut off Australian agricultural products. They're going to isolate themselves if they do this completely.
Yes. Well, it should be isolated to a large degree. It's called the Chinese, you know, Communist Party. You know, pity the people over there.
Okay, so guys, what are we going to do?
Oh, well, if that were to impact the phase one, if, you know, conditional, you would see them increase the borrowing authority from CCC, and some of these payments to farmers will be significant.
Okay, Sean?
They've been isolating countries like Canada for over 18 months through this whole thing. Australia is just new to the game. What China does is they get in a spat with the U.S., and then they punish supposed allies of the U.S. to try to pressure the U.S. to change their tune instead of going at the U.S. directly. And so Australia and Canada get bullied around. We got Canadians illegally detained in the country. Diplomats can barely even talk to them. This is a game that's been going on for a while. I'm just not quite sure that increasing tariffs against China is really the solution at this time, especially when you look at the economic situation that's in front of us in North America.
Yeah, Pam.
And as a producer, I would have to say we were just getting to the point where we thought, especially yesterday when we saw markets go up and purchases and promised purchases of soybeans and then maybe corn. And so if phase one is in peril, where does that leave us? Way back in uncertainty again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the thing that maybe concerned me the most, Jim, is when President Trump indicated that because of the virus, phase one is kind of a secondary issue now. And that's concerning.
Absolutely. That's our lead item in Pro Farmer. This sends a signal.
Yeah. Boy, it's almost like I used to write that thing or something.
So, but what does that mean? So, like, you're right, Chip. It is not a good indication. But what do we, to use one of Jim's titles, you know, signal to noise, what do we take from it?
I think that's an awesome question, Sean, because I think Trump thinks that if they do initiate some tariffs and we do build up the conflict over the coronavirus origin, I think Trump thinks that phase one is still a done deal and will go forward unimpeded, Jim.
Oh, I don't know. That's Sonny Perdue was part of that Thursday interagency review, Chip, and he made the statement in a Bloomberg interview that it's kind of disconcerting to see China buy all these ag products from other countries. So now they have been buying from us as well, but he did say that.
Yeah. If you're one of those people in that White House, like, say, Peter Navarro is the example, this is music to your ears. You are waving the pom-poms big time. If you're somebody that wants the whole entire supply chain to move back to the U.S., you're using this issue as your leverage point to push the president to push forward on these tariffs. So watch Navarro next week probably be all over the media waving his pom-poms.
And there's bipartisan anger at China. Now, that's not saying bipartisan support for tariffs,
right?
But there is bipartisan support for what China appears to have done.
And there's bipartisan anger at, I like that word, bipartisan anger, that phrase, at the WHO, Jim.
Oh, yeah. You mean China's WHO.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the real question, guys, isn't okay. It's the anger is justified, but what do we do with that anger, and do we make the situation worse or better?
Well, the old Reagan line: revenge is a emotion, not a policy.
Mm-hmm. Best, I thought it was revenge is best served cold. Who said that?
That was probably Clint Eastwood or something like that.
Okay.
Okay, so talking about China and some of their purchases of U.S. products, in the weekend of April 23rd, China bought 618,100 metric tons of U.S. soybeans, drop all the way down to the bottom of the report. Give me just a second here. You've got China buying 35,100 metric tons of pork in the weekend of April 23rd. So they are making purchases. There's
beef and more beef too.
Oh, there was more beef in there too.
Oh yeah, a thousand metric tons. Yeah.
Yep, I see it there. I see it there now. Okay, so
sorghum too.
Okay, the cotton where we sit in China, 422,400 running bales. Yeah, so they are making purchases. They are making those purchases.
And we don't want them to stop.
That's right. That's right, because we've got such a supply issue going on in this country right now that we can't really afford for them to stop here right now. Doggone it, I don't think we've got enough time to jump in. No, we don't. I was going to jump into some of the other areas where Secretary Perdue is speaking optimistically about what is going on right now. And one of those areas is for the packing industry and some of the plants that have been shut down as we try to control the spread of COVID-19 inside of the plants or inside of the communities, he thinks that these plants are going to be opening up in days, not weeks. Well, when we come back, I want to discuss just that and some of the gruesome details of how we're dealing with the hog supply out there right now. Okay, we'll be back with the free-for-all in just a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. And Brian, if I'm going looking for the plus signs today, I'm going over to the livestock trade. Some big gains there.
Yeah, sharp to limit up gains in cattle, feeder cattle, and the hog market this morning. And, you know, we've seen the May and June hog contracts are limit up right now and strong gains in the deferred months, but not quite limit there. So I think just a continuation of the corrective gains that we've seen, extending the premiums to the cash market. So that's somewhat of a concern. We need to get those slaughter plants reopened and running as full as possible, as soon as possible. And I think there's some optimism there, and that's why we're building premiums in the futures right now.
Okay, very good. So we saw some solid gains in the grain markets yesterday. Giving back some of those gains today.
Yeah, that's tied to President Trump's comments that maybe we'll take action on China in regards to the COVID-19 situation. And that's kind of, you know, added another layer of uncertainty here to markets. And as a result, we're seeing some selling pressure to close out the week.
All right. You know, it's a new month, Beach, and May is a month that traditionally it's kind of dangerous to be on the short side of the grain markets, isn't it?
Yeah, I will say that we did have end of the month short covering yesterday, and now we open up the first trading day of May with some price pressure. So that's somewhat of a concern, but you know, moving forward, the seasonalities, at least especially in the corn market where they're heavily short, that may be something that where we see them cover up some short positions eventually here.
Good stuff, Brian. Have a good weekend, buddy. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Iowa Farmer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Guys, the executive order, Jim, I want to start with you on this. The executive order that President Trump issued to reopen the packing plants and to keep the packing industry operational here. What I mean, the concern that we've got here, obviously, is for the workers and the health and the safety of those workers. An executive order that is not an order to those workers to go back into that plant, is it?
No, it's because they're not going to force, and they said this at the briefing earlier this week. This is really a signal by the president using the executive order and the Defense Production Act to show the significance of, you know, getting those plants opened up. But Chip, bottom line, the time is not words, it's action. Let's see them, you know, get those safety supplies for, you know, for the workers.
Absolutely. We need to do that now. A week ago, we had the UFCW union. It was right about this time a week ago. They had some workers on there, and the workers were mostly supportive of the packers. But then we start getting comments from the labor representatives, and so. Boy, this touchy situation or touchy comments to make. I get it. But some of the labor reps seem to be fanning the flames rather than trying to find the best way to get people back to work. I mean, one of the reps I saw earlier today said that asking the workers to go back into a slaughterhouse is like asking them to walk into a gas chamber. That doesn't do anybody any good to make comments like that.
No, but a common phrase, Chip, was essential workers, not sacrificial workers. Yeah. Again, it took the meat industry officials to call the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, to convey the seriousness of what this close downs were doing to the meat supply and prices and availability of meat. And almost the second Trump heard that, you wonder why he wasn't hearing that from Vice President Pence and yeah. USDA Secretary Perdue.
Well,
but that's when he immediately turned around and focused on it. Again, bottom line, Mr. Secretary, no words here, just deliver the confidence to those meatpacker workers that they will be confident of going into those plants again and working.
And that takes the PPEs. There's no doubt about that. And strict adherence to the CDC and now OSHA finally, Jim.
OSHA, yeah.
We finally got some OSHA recommendations out there, too, and they've got to follow them. That's the bottom line. They've got to follow. Pam, what did you make of Colin Peterson's meeting along with the Minnesota governor there in Worthington?
I think it's great. I think it draws a lot of attention to the issue at hand and what the solutions are. And, you know, when we're talking about deliver the protection the workers need, the workers and the Food Safety and Inspection Service, there's 140 of them that are sick and two have died. Yeah. And the USDA FSIS has said, well, we expect that we will ship masks and hand sanitizer, quote, in the near future. Well, that just doesn't cut it for anybody, and it doesn't cut it for the whole value chain. If we want to get this up to benefit farmers, workers, consumers having meat, we got to start addressing the issues at hand.
Yeah, and I would edit what you just said there, Pam. Instead of starting to address the issues, address them. Period.
Yes.
End of story.
Yeah, and you know, I could be wrong, but I thought I read that the workers, if they do not show up, are not eligible for unemployment if they're ordered back to work.
I believe that's coming out of the Iowa governor's office, Pam.
Just checking my facts.
Yep, I believe that is right, coming out of the Iowa governor's office, Governor Kim Reynolds' office. So, yeah, that it's kind of a dicey situation. No question about it. They've got to make sure that when those workers get there that they've got all the protective gear that they need. Haney, you were going to jump in. I know you were.
Well, yeah, this is the thing is there's no simple answers to such a complex problem. The whole issue with Meadows and the meatpackers lobbying him and him talking to Trump reminds me of when Sonny Perdue brought his maps into the White House to save NAFTA. It's like, where was everybody for the last 5 weeks?
Yeah.
My comment was, this is something that probably should have happened weeks ago. And I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean that from the standpoint, I think it would have put more pressure on the meatpacking industry to maybe be somewhat more proactive in terms of what the guidelines are. I hope. I've been hearing that there's been a lot of collaboration behind the scenes within the NAMI group and here in Canada, the Canadian Meat Council, trying to share best practices. I know they feel like they've been kind of chasing this one, and I don't blame them. This has had a real toll. Why wasn't this equipment made available? Why does it take an executive order to make this kind of equipment available?
I think it's just simply the availability, and I thought that was the case until I started seeing consumers posting pictures of 50 packs of masks that are available for like $35. If we can't, I honestly do not know if we can still claim it's just an availability issue or if it's an unwillingness. And I don't think it's an unwillingness on the part of the packers, you guys.
No.
They want those workers to be safe.
I read this morning, though, Chip, that, you know, talking about the food inspectors,
yeah,
they were discouraged early on from wearing masks because it would cause panic in the plants.
Okay, so yeah, one for all and all for one kind of thing.
See, the whole thing is trust, right? And
yep,
so
yep,
I know
confidence.
Right, the plants have been working very, very diligently to try to build trust between themselves and the unions. And the question is
yeah,
you know, how do you make that happen? And we have seen some plants come back online. And I think, you know, we're not going to see a full capacity situation in the short term. I read one, I think it was in Jim's report, talking about, you know, 80% seems kind of unlikely. But one, you know, one shift at a time, keeping the lines moving, keeping the workers safe is going to be a huge success here, even though probably inventories continue to build. But that chain moving just a little bit is better than them being shut down. And as we keep those chains moving, it builds confidence between the plant and the workers that we can do this together. And I think that's a huge positive.
Right, right.
Sean, you indicated you didn't want to criticize. Well, I will. USDA has let the ag sector down. Not only are they tardy in getting the CFAP rule even over to OMB, as of last hour, they hadn't even sent it over there. It looks like my sources are telling me Purdue was so fixated on the details of the $19 billion assistance program, $16 billion direct payments, $3 billion, you know, food, purchases, that he took the eye off the ball. And also, Mike Pence, as head of the White House Corona Task Force, Mike Pence should have known, coming from Indiana. So let's rally here and correct prior wrongs because they let the ag sector down.
Okay. Yeah, it's action instead of ideas that we are in need of right now. I just got this message. Go ahead, yep. Pam.
No, you go ahead.
The question that I got in on text here, the question is, are the workers being infected at the plant, or is it because of some of the close living conditions within their communities?
Yeah, okay. That's a really good question, but that does not shift responsibility away from these plants.
Absolutely.
The plants were aware of the living conditions.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that doesn't just shift all responsibility as if, okay, because these people are all living together, it's their fault. We got to be careful how we sort of try to point fingers at that situation.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that 100%. It's not one or the other, okay? I mean, it's life, and it's life working in a tough situation there. So, yeah, man, there is no easy answer. All I know is that Colin Peterson, Jim, guaranteed that there will be indemnity payments for these hogs that are being euthanized. Did you hear that?
Yes, and there will be, Chip. My concern is how long it's going to take to get whatever number you call it, phase four of the COVID-19 aid package, because both sides are putting lines in the sand on what they want out of that.
I certainly hope that there is some help for those producers that are having to euthanize the animals, because Pam, it's, and financially it stinks, but emotionally it's tearing these guys up.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the same as what
one hog operation, Chip, that took 15 hours to shoot 4,000 pigs.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
very emotional.
It's dragging them down. No question about it. Okay. When we come back, we're going to continue and we're going to wrap up the free-for-all on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Valent USA, offering proven crop protection solutions to help growers achieve a more sustainable, profitable operation. Visit Valent.com to learn more.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Yeah, the Farm On campaign has been fun to watch. It's something that Farm Journal is pursuing out here. And if you want to participate in it, you can send a picture of what it means to you to Farm On to 31313. Just include Farm On. That's one word, capital F, capital O-N. Farm On to 31313, and Farm Journal social media might be using that here in a couple of days. You can also tweet it. Just include hashtag Farm On in there. And Pam, being in agriculture, I mean, this week we've heard from Bob Birdsall down in Missouri, Lindsay Pullen, who is helping to keep some farm youth involved in agriculture with some virtual livestock shows. Michelle Jones from Montana, Tim Recker from Iowa, who you know, Dwayne Faber, dairy producer out in Washington State. They've all shared their stories about what it means to Farm On. And it is a different spring. How has it affected you?
Well, I think the good thing about it being spring, at least in my part of the world, is that we're busy and we're doing the same things we always do, and we're doing them with the same commitment we always do. So, you know, we're one of the lucky ones that had ideal planting conditions and great soil conditions this spring. A lot of my friends did not. So what it means is there's some kind of normalcy on our farm, in our lives, to get back. Now, that being said, if I listen to the other stories, what are the immediate concerns of other producers is, you know, we got to get the value chain moving again, whether you're in livestock or crop or vegetables, and we got to recover our demand. So I think Farm On is a good thing just to give us some positive news.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, I know that some farmers are feeling a little, you know, the emotions tied to this of how they feel so bad for some of their friends that have not been able to continue on in their business. They are locked, you know, quote unquote locked up, and they can't get out and get to work and stuff like that. But you know what? Those that are in a shutdown situation, they need farmers to continue on as well. And they need farmers to do their best to work with the plants to make sure that we can get them open and to manage the supplies that are coming in. The one that I think people are really struggling with is the dumping of milk. Why can't we just repackage it some other way? Why can't we dumping milk when people need food is ridiculous. It's in the processing side of things that we've so specialized that there's a reason that we don't sell raw milk in the grocery stores, guys. It's got to be processed. And if there is no processing capacity, we run into some real issues out there. So we've been talking about Farm On. Jim, some of the states have decided that it's time to retail on. Is the right decision?
I think it's absolutely the right decision, because now we have the hospitals, most of them throughout this great country, ready to attack any increase again in COVID-19. We weren't there before in some states, Chip, so let business begin.
Yeah, the hospital situation is the rural hospital, and I say rural hospital, but it impacted Mayo Clinic's. Their furloughs, just unbelievable number of people that they've had to furlough at Mayo Clinic's just because they haven't been able to do any elective surgeries. And not only that, but they're finding out that people have suffered some pretty dramatic medical emergencies and decided not to come to the hospital because they're afraid of contracting COVID-19.
Yes. Oh. And the small hospitals, I know my doctor is part of a small group, and they're having a lot of problems keeping in business.
Yeah.
Well, and also a lot of people that have lost their jobs that don't have health care. That's another issue that is definitely having an impact too.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about
it. I think this really shows us how we can be better after this is all over, because it's shown us how we can improve in so many areas, in so many sectors. And I heard somebody say the other day, we've been so concentrated on efficiencies that we haven't paid enough attention to what it takes to be resilient, and especially resilient through a pandemic.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, there's going to be some reevaluation of a lot of different systems out there. I don't think there's any question about that. Sean, what's the are they starting to open things up in Canada?
Yeah, plans are each province in the last 2 weeks is, I think a majority of the provinces now have released some plans. Instead of three phases, it's being released more in like a five phase, with typically each province phase three, four, and five not having dates attached to them. Yep. So really depending on how phase one and two go. I know golf courses here are going to open on Saturday, which is another thing. We were talking about sports at the opening. Yep. It's another like, oh, I finally get to go out and do something.
Yep.
People can go fishing, stuff like that. So it's a slow process, but it's starting to happen.
And what that means is that we're starting to use some more fuel. And if we're starting to use more fuel, we can start to use some more ethanol, Pam. That has got to be some good news. And the latest data that we got from the EIA suggests that maybe we've got consumption above production right now because we're starting to pull some ethanol out of stocks. That's really good news.
That's really good news. And, you know, I live on a state highway and I've seen just more traffic, period. And even if it's people just out, just going somewhere, but staying in their car, we're all going steer crazy.
Yeah, that is so true. So true. All right, you guys. Haney, 10 seconds. What are you watching?
How much planting we can get done here over the weekend. People are racing away, and we've got it started on a good part of the country.
Very good. Thank you, Sean. We'll talk to you again next week.
Cheers, everybody.
You bet. That's Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Pam Johnson, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week, too.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, that's Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer. And Jim yep. Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer thank Policy you. Analyst. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. Hey, come back this afternoon. We got Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing, and Monday morning, Sam Graves from Missouri.